Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
It's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Tumalo. Today, we're going to talk about a topic that is talked about a lot, and you go to conferences, and everybody's always looking for the latest, greatest, cure-all, silver bullet when it comes to marketing gift planning. And I typically will go to some of these seminars and walk out and saying, okay, that's all cool and all, but what do I really do with that? You look at some of the research and showing what donors tend to respond to, which is great, or what where they're donating. But I kind of tend to walk away saying, all right, what's the practical? What can I do when I go back to the office? How can I apply this? And is there anything new? And most times there is nothing new. But the older I get, the more I realize in any area of my life, our lives, that it's not always about adding stuff. It's not always about the new stuff. It's about, a lot of times, it's just about just getting better at what we already have and what we're doing and what's already available to us. It's not just about more and more and more and new. So my guest today is somebody that I've known a long time, and she is a gift planning marketing guru, or garah, if that's the female version of that.
Garah. Is there a female version?
And that is my lovely guest, Claire Meyerhoff. Welcome, Claire.
Hey, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on your podcast.
Pleasure. You, as I know you a long time, and I know that you have a media background, right? You were...
I do have a media background. I went to college for broadcast journalism in Washington, D.C., and I worked in all news radio, and I've worked in television, and I've been a news reporter and an anchor and a writer and producer and basically everything there is in broadcast news. And it's been a really interesting background for me to have in our wonderful world of philanthropy.
Wow. So this is going to be the best podcast we've done so far, right?
Well, I know not to step on you, and I know about dead air, and I know that the main rule of radio is basically just keep going. So even if you think you've lost it, you just keep going, because you might still be on the air.
Well, you know, I don't have a background in radio or broadcasting or theater or any of that. I did take a couple acting classes when I started speaking, and there's so much to learn from communication, obviously. I mean, that's broadcast, I guess, broad communication, but to bring that to one-on-one communication, working with employees, managers, donors, and exactly what you said is just, like, one of the things I learned in the acting class was, like, what you just said, don't step on other people, provide the space for somebody else to, especially with the improv classes, provide that space, encourage other people's ideas, and basically shut up and let people respond and don't step on them. I mean, it's like common sense, but it's not common practice.
Well, it's something you'd learn really as a radio reporter, because let's say I was interviewing you and you're saying all this great stuff. I don't want me on the tape, because I'm going to cut that tape up and I want that great little like 10-second soundbite or 20-second soundbite. And if in the middle of the soundbite I go, oh, wow, or yeah, or something, like, I've ruined it. So what you learn in radio is to just be quiet. So if you ever watch someone interviewing someone for broadcast, they're nodding a lot. They're like looking at the person and nodding. They're not talking back to them. They're not going, really? Oh, yeah? Oh, wow. They're not doing any of that. They're silent, because they want what the person they're interviewing, they want that on you know, recorded clean, just them. They don't need you on there going, oh, yeah, sure, great, oh, yeah.
There's one of the late night shows, a couple of them over the years, Jimmy, one of them, where the band leaders, do you ever notice they're talking when they do the monologue, and the band leader's like, yeah, right.
That's different, because that's like a show, and it's like a, it's that kind of thing. And so the difference for broadcast is if you have the person like on your set and you're talking to them, that's okay. But typically when you're interviewing someone, whether it's for television or radio, you're looking for a sound bite that you're going to pluck out of there. And that needs to be clean. It can't have like other junk on it. Like, exactly. If you're interviewing someone and they're saying the greatest thing in the world, and then like a kid rides by on his bike and goes, hey, screw you. which has happened to me as a reporter. You're doing something and some kid like runs by and yells something a lot worse than that at you. And it's like, okay. And then you have to ask your person, I'm sorry, do you think we could do this again? Because I said there, and I'd really like to hear more of that and not like the kid screaming obscenities at you. But so that's news. That's the broadcast business. And when I worked in broadcasting for a long time, and then a lot of people that work in the news business, their first job out of the news business usually is in public relations, especially in Washington, D.C. You go to work for a PR agency, you go to work for a nonprofit as their PR person. And what you're doing there is you're trying to get news coverage for them. So you're doing public relations. You're trying to get stories, good stories done about your organization. And that's PR. So I did some PR in DC, and then I started working a lot with nonprofits, and I really, really liked it. And then one day a friend of mine was at a conference, and this very, very nice man came up to her and said, a company I'm working for is looking for a really good writer. We just can't find anyone. And my friend told this guy, well, and she thought about it, and she thought, well, Claire really is the best writer I know. But Claire wouldn't like plan giving. It's so boring. But she gave the guy my name anyhow, and he called me, and that guy is none other than Mr. Joseph Tumelo.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. We did not rehearse this.
You forget that. Like, that's my story, and I always tell people that story, and you always forget, but you were at a conference in DC, and you went up to this person that had given a workshop on writing, and afterwards you had asked her about, like, hey, do you know any good writers? And it was this really good friend of mine, and she gave you my name, and you called me, and that's the first time we ever talked on the phone, and now this is the most recent time we're
lovely. And you've learned, so you've been able to take your background obviously and figure out how to make this stuff exciting and really appeal to emotions and not be so intellectual, right, in the messaging of gift planning.
So here's the real deal when it comes to when you work in the news business and you're writing. First off, in broadcasting especially, you're writing very short. I worked at CNN as a news writer. They'd say, Claire, here's the story for you. And it would be a story about, let's say, the Ethiopia-Eritrea border conflict back in the 90s. And so in this 20 seconds worth of copy, I have to tell a very general audience the latest thing going on in this border conflict. I have to give it a little bit of perspective about, like, why does this matter? Why do we care? And then tell people, like, sort of what's next or what the future is. And I use that example a lot with my clients because they'll write this big, long thing, right? And I'll say, you know, if I can explain, tell you the latest on the Ethiopia-Eritrea border war and give you some context and tell you where it's headed in 20 seconds worth of copy, I think we can talk about what you want to talk about in less than 5 pages of this. So you have to learn really early on how to be really succinct, really get right to the point, and also make it interesting for people to listen to and not only inform them, but make them feel a little something. So you just don't want to write some like dry thing. You want to find the best thing. When you've only got 20 seconds worth of copy space, you're not going to tell them the boring stuff, right? You're going to tell them the interesting stuff or the why it matters. So in communications, in nonprofits, and whether you're doing anything for your nonprofit or you're doing a plan giving marketing push, it's really the like, why? Why should anyone care? What matters? And get to it pretty quickly and make it interesting so that they don't tune out. Because, like in broadcasting, the person can just turn the channel, right? They can just flip that channel. They can turn the TV off. And in all the marketing that we do in plan giving and other areas of our philanthropy, we make all this stuff, right? Like people send postcards and they send newsletters. Well, the recipient on the other end isn't going to turn off the channel, but they are going to toss it in the trash or hit the delete button on their in their mailbox.
And we're so inundated, right? I mean, God, the amount of information that is bombarded at each of us every day. It's just, I've been following a guy, Donald Miller, Story Brand. Really like him a lot. He has a book and courses and just a lot of really very practical, simple takeaways. And there was an old adage, used to be, you need to make 8 to 10 marketing touches before somebody responds. And Donald says, you need 8 to 10 touches before anybody even notices you anymore. And then it's another 8 to 10 touches.
Yeah, I really like that because a friend of mine who is she really is a guru in the fundraising world. And she always says, Claire, you've got it. And she's talking about blogging and things like that within our industry. She says, Claire, you've got to tell people the same. You tell people the same thing 100 times. And she abides by that. And maybe not 100 times, but we always, people will try to come up with like a new thing to talk about for their blog, right? So, but there's probably that same thing you always talk about. That's your most important thing and your key message. We'll find like a new way to talk about that because not everyone is reading your blog like religiously or listening to your podcast religiously. And that's why in news, when you're on the air, I worked at an all news radio station, so you're on all the time. But you always have to remember that people are tuning in all the time. They're not just tuning in at 3:05 when the network news can listening to you from 3:05 until 4:00. People are joining you at 3:18 and 3:17 and 3:42. So people are always joining you, and you can't assume that people know everything. And that's what I find a lot of times when I'm reading things, whether it's for nonprofits or anything, I'll read something and I'll realize like they think I read like yesterday's blog, or they're assuming I've been reading their blog forever, and they just kind of assume that you know these things. So when I write stuff, I always keep in mind that people are always joining and people are taking things out of context. So like, let's say you make a kit of something, right? It's got like 3 or 4 things in this kit. But a piece of it gets dropped, like your little ways to give brochure or something gets dropped out of this kit. Well, that should be able to stand alone. So like everything that you make for your philanthropy, whether it's like a ways to give guide or some kind of info sheet or anything like that, it should kind of stand alone so that people know what it is. So if you have a sheet that's talking about your legacy society, but it doesn't say anything about like what it means to be in the legacy society, then that doesn't make any sense to me. So you just need like a little line on there about, well, what is the legacy society? What is the sheet of paper that's floating around here? So that's another little sort of broadcast thing is, you know, everything should stand alone.
And there's another really big point. Tell me if you disagree or agree, is that, because I think about this when I'm always trying to create content to promote our business. To your point, not everybody sees it. So it's okay to keep pushing the same message. I mean, you look at major advertisers, you know, in the commercial world, they're Coca-Cola and some of these others. Yes, they come up with new slogans, but they keep pushing the same billboard, the same commercial over and over and over again. And it's right. Okay. You don't have to reinvent it every time.
The Geico Gecko. So it's like we're still seeing the Geico Gecko. And now when I see a Geico Gecko commercial, I kind of glance up and, well, is he wearing a French beret and he's eating croissant? Or is he like, you know, driving a tractor? What is the Geico Gecko doing? So yes, exactly. It's like they've built a really awesome brand awareness. And that's what nonprofits need to do. But what I find most of the time is that nonprofits are all over the place with their brand. And then the plan giving people, the philanthropy people, they feel like they kind of need to create this new brand or something. And so sometimes that happens. So I think like in marketing, it's very much like advertising. And there's a big difference between marketing, advertising, promotions, and public relations, for instance. And that's something I'd like to chat about a little bit.
Yeah. What are the differences?
So marketing is in our world, mostly what we do is marketing. So we you know, do a mailer or postcards. Marketing is when you're paying to drop things into people's laps, mostly. So marketing is you're sending stuff to people's house. You have a new car wash. You're like, oh, how am I going to get people to my new car wash? Well, I'm going to do some advertising. And advertising is I'm going to take out an ad in the local newspaper and I'm going to put up a billboard. So that's advertising. Marketing is going right straight to your consumer. So you might send them like a little packet with a coupon in it. That's marketing. Come to our car wash. Now, promotions is different, and promotions is really cool. So a promotion might be the car wash, a really good friend of the car wash owner is like the most famous clown in the area. He's like this awesome clown that always comes to birthday parties and stuff. So for promotions, you might have that clown out in front of your car wash with a bunch of balloons and some cupcakes and some different things. So promotions is more like on site. You're promoting something right there and then. And then finally, the last thing is public relations. And public relations is earned media. So you're getting the media to give you some free airtime, basically, or free space in their newspaper. So let's say the car wash does a great benefit for a soldier who was injured, a local popular person who was injured in a, you know, Afghanistan or something, in their home, and they need to raise money for that. And the car wash puts on this really great event. And they might call the local TV station, the local radio station, and say, hey, we're doing this. The family's going to be here. Would you like to come and cover it? And now they've gotten some basically earned media about their car wash, but also their good cause if they're raising it for a charity or something. So they're getting the word out. And that's kind of, you know, we talk about in our world, well, how do we get the word out? How do we get the word out about philanthropy and doing an endowment? How do we get the word out that you can make a gift from your IRA or something like that? So I'm not like a plan giving marketing person, because that's mostly in our field, it's all plan giving marketing. And that's what people have a budget for, right? They have a budget, a marketing budget. So when I come to work with a client, I bring all my little cookies to the party, and I do marketing, maybe some advertising, not usually, but I do like promotions and public relations are really my strong suits. And those are the things that don't cost you very much. So those are my good cookies, so to say.
Well, so can you give examples of, as it applies to fundraising, like what a marketing, well, we know marketing, you mentioned direct mail, email appeals. As far as advertising, promotions, and PR, what would be some practical things that folks could do?
Well, this would be like, you know, a great sort of a promotional thing. So when I work with a new client, I want to know, well, where's your audience? So let's say your best plan giving audience, it's a plan giving client, and this is a really easy one. It's a college. Mm-hmm. It's a school. It's a college. Who are your best plan giving prospects? Well, older people who have been contributing for a long time. Well, let's say you have a lot of people who come to reunions. They're at your reunion. They're there. So you have these older people that are coming to a 50th or 60th reunion. Maybe they've come to every reunion for 10 years or 5 years for many, many, many years. And whether they contribute or not, they come to your reunion. So at your reunion, what you can have is to promote your legacy society is at your reunion, where you have like other tables with things, maybe the sports teams have something or whatever. You can have like a really nice table at your reunion somewhere at a cocktail hour or something with some nice like gifts on the table, like a giveaway, like a nice umbrella that has the college logo on it. And then you have a nice, big, beautiful sign about your legacy society. And then you have some literature and information and maybe a little list, and you have a nice person. And it doesn't even have to be like a plan giving person or anyone who knows anything really about philanthropy. You just have a nice person. You could have a young person standing at this table. And when people come over and they say, oh, how do I get this umbrella? I'd love to have, oh, that's a cool umbrella. Then all the person has to do is say, well, it's a gift from our legacy circle. And that's people who have included the college in their will. And I'd be happy to give you an umbrella, but could you also please take some of this literature or put your email on this list? Oh yeah, that'd be fine. Thank you so much. Or the person says to you, oh God, no, I don't want anything, blah, blah, blah. I just want my umbrella. Well then, you know, you can give them the umbrella, but so anyhow, promotions is more like taking something you already have. So let's say you're a local organization and you have a lot of volunteers, and every spring you have a volunteer luncheon. Well, all your volunteers are at the luncheon. Those are awesome plan giving prospects. So at your volunteer luncheon, like promote plan giving in a way. So let's say you have two nice ladies who are your newest members of your legacy society. Well, at the luncheon, you can call them up on stage, thank them for their fabulous gift, and then give them their new little pin or their legacy society gift and say a little bit about why we're thanking them. And that costs you not a whole lot of money. And that's where you have this audience of these people in the room. They're volunteers. They love you. They've been giving you their time for years and years and years. So those are great plan giving prospects for you. So if you're not doing anything at your volunteer luncheon for plan giving, to me, I would start there before I would spend $10,000 on marketing.
Great idea. And that gets to my earlier comment at the beginning about better leveraging what you already have, right? It's not always about adding something new. It's what do we have? What are the platforms that we're using now? Right. And why are we not messaging We're not taking advantage of that.
Right. And then there's also public relations. So for instance, if you're kind of in like a smaller community without a lot of competition, you're in a smaller town or small city, and you have a local publication or radio station or something. If you're in philanthropy and you have a donor who has just made a really cool gift, they've done this really neat thing. They started an endowment at the local hospital named for their mother because their mother had been a volunteer there for a long time, and you have this nice little story. Well, you can go to your PR person at your hospital and say, look, I've got this nice story. Do you know of any local stations that might be interested in this? And your PR person at the hospital might say, hey, you know, that's a great little story. I love that story. I know this lady at the local radio station that she likes to talk about people who are doing good in the community. So, but you have to have a story. So you have the story, and now you can pitch that to the media. So you could pitch it to your local radio station. You could even write up the story and send it maybe to your local paper. And sometimes they just print it these days. They want content because they also have a website. They have to populate. So if you have a good story, you can get PR for your story and get attention that way as well. And that's a good way to promote your program. You have to, of course, have the person's willingness to have their story told in the public or go on a radio station. So it's not for everybody. It's not for everything, but you may have that great story at your organization. And it happens to be a planned giving story, and it's a great story. And maybe the person would like to help be an ambassador for you and go on the radio or be interviewed on television or by the local reporter or for the local website or local magazine.
It's really interesting. I wonder if people ever feel like, you know what, this is probably not newsworthy, or this is not interesting enough. Do you think that's a common...
People don't know what news is when they haven't worked in the news business or PR or something like that, because I've worked for clients as a PR person. They say, oh, can you get us coverage on this? And I'm thinking to myself, no reporter wants to do that story. There's absolutely nothing interesting about that. All that is self-serving. Mm. So if you were the car wash and you went to a reporter and said, can you do a story about my new car wash? It's really great. You'd be like, why? Why would anybody do a story about a car wash? But if your car wash had the very first like ultra laser fancy schmancy thing that no one's ever had before in the state, and you know maybe there's a story there, like maybe there's like a cool science story at your car wash or something. So if it's too hard for you to come up with the story, you don't have a story, so you can't really manufacture stories. So this is what I tell people. The story is this: if you went to a cocktail party and someone said, oh, what do you do? And you said, oh, I work at the local college. I work in planned giving. Oh, what's that? Well, that's, we help people leave a legacy to the college in many ways. Oh, really? And then if you wanted to pique their interest, you go, well, for instance, we had this lady and she realized she had all this Coca-Cola stock that she'd had forever, and she didn't want to sell it. And she thought, she came to me and said, well, is there something I can do with this? And it turned out she had like $1 million worth of Coca-Cola stock. And she honestly didn't want to sell it because she'd have to pay all this tax on it. And she didn't really need the money. And I told her, well, we could take every penny of that Coca-Cola stock and we could add a pediatric wing on the hospital or something. And the person at the cocktail party would go, oh my God, really? That's incredible. I've never heard of anything like that. So see, if you have a good story, you have a good story. If you were at a cocktail party and someone asked you about your work and you told them something cool that had just happened or that you'd worked on, and the person goes, oh, wow, really? I didn't know that. Well, then you have a story. Whereas if you say, I have a car wash. Oh, wow, really? That's about as far as it goes. But
so another big takeaway, look for the story in everything and everyone, right?
Yes.
Look for the story.
And planned giving, I always tell when I speak to groups, and they're planned giving groups or maybe they're AFP groups or something, I always say, your best stories really are your planned giving stories. Because let's say some really rich person in your community writes a check for $50,000. That's not very interesting. That's just what that person should do. But let's say some retired teacher who, you know, rode his bike to work every day has left the college $500,000. Like, that's really interesting. That's a good story. So you do have really great stories within planned giving, because a lot of times there's that element of surprise, and that's what makes it a good story. Like, wow, I didn't know that little lady who lived in that little house down the lane had millions of dollars. Well, yes, she did, because she's been saving. So in planned giving, sometimes you have that element of surprise. So that helps make a good story. or you just have a true heartfelt story. So going back to that wealthy person who writes a check $10,000 a year, well, they just do that maybe because, you know, well, they do that for a lot of charities and they want to do the right thing. But in planned giving, someone's really going out of their way to do this. And they usually have a really heartfelt reason for that. Like they got a scholarship when they were in college and they want to give back. They became successful or moderately successful and they want to give back. So a lot of times there's a really good story behind it. For instance, I worked once with a Parkinson's organization and this man who was making a planned gift and we wanted to feature him as a donor story. When I interviewed him on the phone, he said, well, Claire, I grew up with a mother who had Parkinson's. And that was back in the 1930s in New York City. And I saw my mother and what she went through and her hands would shake and I would be worried about her or I would be embarrassed by her shaking hands. And then he said, but Claire, every time we crossed the street and she was my mom and she took my hand and I was 6 years old, her hand didn't shake when she took my hand to cross the street. And that's like the little quote that I used because that really painted a picture of why the guy cares. That's why he cares, because he saw what his mother went through and he admired his mother and he cared about Parkinson's his whole life and gave a lot to different Parkinson's organizations. He didn't have Parkinson's. His wife didn't have Parkinson's. His mom had Parkinson's years ago and had died from it. And I just think that's a great story. And I hardly told you anything. I didn't tell you that guy, what he did for a living, where he went to college, where he lives. I didn't tell you his hobbies. I didn't tell you if he was married or not married, if he was black, if he was white. I didn't tell you anything about him. But that's all the story that you really need to know, is that's why he cares. And he cared enough to do this great thing. And in your donor stories, that's all you really want. You just want to show, why does the person care? And then you need a nice quote from them. You need a great photograph. And then you just want to have a little call to action. Because in planned giving donor stories, we just want to show that other people have done this and you can do it too. Hey, normal person, this guy did this. Have you thought about doing this? Please consider it. And then your job is done.
Make it relatable, right?
Make it relatable and just make it and kind of normalize it. Because the thing about planned giving is it's a little weird. It's a little weird. It's not your typical thing. So everybody donates to someone who's doing a marathon, right? A walk for cystic fibrosis or something. Like that's very normal. Oh, my kid's doing a walk. Would you sponsor him for $5? Yeah, sure. That's really normal. Or donating cash outright is very normal. GoFundMe, this family lost their home. Give us $100. We're trying to raise money for them. That's really normal. But nobody walks around talking about like, oh, I think I'm going to update my estate plans and include my favorite charities in my will. Like, it's just not like a typical thing that people talk about a lot. And so part of our job is to kind of normalize that a bit. We want to show that, wow, yeah, I don't have a will. Gee, I need to make a will. Oh, I can include a charity in my will. Yeah, I would like to leave some money to my favorite causes because I don't have any children, or my children are really successful, or I can't stand my children. I put them all through college and they hate me. So you can, you just want to tap into those people that see this other person that's like them, like a normal person, and put that in their mind. Like, oh, that's something I could do. I should consider that. I never thought about that before. And so getting back to what you said, Joe, about multiple messages in multiple places, well, you can't just do like one mailing or one ad in your alumni magazine and expect to get like all these people so excited about your planned giving program. You have to do it a lot. But unfortunately, like marketing costs a lot. And so are you going to send like thousands of postcards every year? I don't know. What do you think? What do you do, Joe, with your clients? What do you do? What do you recommend for marketing?
Well, exactly what we've been talking about is just message it in everything and don't rely too much on it. Send an appropriate amount. There's certainly plenty of things you can do that don't cost you a lot. Emails and some social media, though I'm not convinced that's the right platform. But make sure you're piggybacking it on everything that you're sending out the door. And I'm really on a kick. Not a kick, but I am whatever you want to call it, on a crusade. How about a crusade? Crusade is a stronger, more conviction word. I want a crusade to help people integrate planned giving into all their giving.
Yes.
I forget who it's attributed to, another fundraising consultant, but that the comment that they're not annual fund donors, they're not major gift donors, they're not planned giving donors, they're donors, period. They're people who are really passionate about what we're doing. So I'm looking at that and I'm preaching that to my clients and the donor work I do now and treating donors in a holistic way to say, there's all these options available to you. I'm not going to, yes, I'm under pressure. We have the new cancer wing and I've got to raise $5 million for that this year. At the same time, I need to honor you, the donor, and what's important to you and not push my agenda on you. So if I'm really serving you and my organization in the best way, then I need to be providing you all these options. It might be a major gift. It might be a planned gift. It might be a combination. It could be a pledge, right? So I'm looking at that and saying, well, are we doing that in the marketing? We're still, and the big term is silos, break down the silos. Right. We see that a lot in the big shops, big universities, big national charities that have their own planned giving departments. They tend to, not all, but many, tend to be siloed, and they bring these planned giving people in when the opportunity arises, as opposed to saying, no, planned giving is everybody's business. Everybody needs to be intentional about it. Everyone needs to be including that in their everyday conversations with all donors. So we're doing all that work, but I'm looking at the marketing and say, well, we're still siloing the marketing. If we're sending out separate, if we're making a separate planned giving brochure, I'm kind of brainstorming now, but how about a brochure that is more of a ways of giving, and it's all in there. It's annual fund, it's major gifts, it's planned gifts, and it's all this holistic hybrid approach. And so I may be going straying from your question, but it's just a big point that I'm really wrestling with. How do we not, if everyone agrees that we should be breaking down these silos, why are we still siloing the marketing and treating planned giving as a separate mailing?
Because like you say, it's a separate department. And so at these bigger organizations, it's very separate. You have major gifts people, you have annual fund maybe, you have planned giving people, you have five planned giving people, and they're very separate and they operate very, very separately. But most organizations, I think, are a little more, at least with their fundraising, working together. But then what about like the rest of their organization? So like your communications and marketing department at your charity, do they know anything about planned giving or just that one time you hand them that ad that you want to have go in the magazine, they don't even really look at it. So they don't even know. So a thing that I like to do with some of my clients is I talk about internal public relations. So typically public relations is external, right? So you want everybody to see the thing on TV about your, you know, product or whatever. You want the general public to see it because you want them to buy it or come use your service. But internal public relations is sort of doing PR within your own organization. And so one thing I like to mention to a client, I'll say, well, why don't you like invite this nice planned giving lady who's making this gift, this really nice lady that's doing something cool, and invite her in and have like a little lunch or something, or a little coffee, or a little, you know, late in the day pizza party or something, and just invite the whole staff from the whole place and have and thank this woman for her planned gift. And you introduce her to everybody at your organization who's there, and you say, oh, this is Kathy Johnson, and she's been supporting us for years and years and years. And one day she said, oh, I wish I could do more. And then she updated her trust and then came back to me and told me about it. And she's also done these other things. She's giving us some stock or she's giving us an IRA, and she's just, isn't she like a great person? And your audience, your people who work at your organization, now they see planned giving in a whole different light, because it's more about thanking this really nice donor, frankly, who's giving you a lot of money eventually that's going to help you keep your job or you do your work better or you provide more services. And so anybody who works for a nonprofit should really be happy to hear about a planned giving person. It's fabulous. And so you could have a little lunch or a little event around that person and thank them, give them a little gift, right? Give them something and thank them. And it doesn't have to be a big deal, but then you just have your staff come and then you talk a little bit about planned giving. And then you say to your staff, look, if you're ever talking to someone and they say something like, oh, I wish I could do more, I'm on a limited budget, I give you $10 a year, but gee, I wish I could do more. Then you could say, well, you know, why don't you talk to Joe, who he's our planned giving director, and he might be able to, you know, talk to you about a way that you might be able to make a gift. So you have to educate your staff as well. And it's not just about education. Like I find that in nonprofits, they love to talk about informing and educating, or we're educating people. But right. That's educating is like dumping information on them. And it's like, I don't want to sit in a class and I went to college already. I don't want to sit in a class for an hour and get all this information dumped on me. I don't need to know that much about planned giving. I don't need to be educated. if I'm like the marketing person at your organization, I don't have to be educated about planned giving. I just need to know who are the kinds of people and what are they doing, and then who to hand that person off to. So,
yeah. And I think I'm convinced you have to be accountable, right? So I agree. It's education is important, especially for gift officers. We want them to become confident about talking at a high level about the gifts, at least have some knowledge. They don't need to be experts, but they need to be accountable. And a really simple way to do that is to make sure they have plan giving metrics in their overall, whatever you're measuring them. So whatever their goals, metrics, measuring gift officers, make sure there's plan giving component, some type of plan giving component. Otherwise, we only really manage what we measure. And if I, as a major gift officer, have no plan giving metrics assigned to me, whatever that might be, then I have all the best intentions, but I'm under pressure to bring cash in the door. And I'm not going to be as intentional about integrating plan giving into my everyday work because I'm not being measured on it.
Well, because like you say, it's donor first, right? It's about the donor first and the organization second. What can the donor do? Like if the donor can't write you a check for $1 million, then that's not what they're going to do for you. So it's about the donor first. And you don't know what else donors are able to give you unless you kind of start this conversation. And the people who I know, and Joe, I think you and I come from similar backgrounds in that we both worked in the industry, and you worked in sales and I worked in, you know, producing materials and stuff. And you and I both ended up talking to an awful lot of different fundraisers and planned giving people at all kinds of organizations, hundreds of them probably. And because if I was going to do a newsletter with someone, I got to talk to the planned giving director and maybe two other people in the department. And I would learn from them. I would hear so much from them about their donors and how they do their jobs and their successes. And I think that's what people like you and me really bring to the table. We've just talked to so many people and we've heard like kind of the good ways to do stuff. And the really good fundraisers are these people that do integrate it all and know how to listen for stuff. So for instance, I can hear a plan giving friend in my head and she would go looking for a major gift and say, and the person would say, well, you know, I would like to do that this year, but I just had this happen and this and that. And then they ask for other types of assets. Like, well, do you have a retirement plan? Have you ever considered this kind of gift? And they get a different gift. And conversely, I've heard of plan giving people go to a plan giving, what they thought would be a plan giving conversation. But then the donor would say, you know what? I've just redone my plans. I'm not going to revisit that. But then they go and write them a check for $5,000 or something because they feel bad that they can't do this other thing that the person's asking them for. So you hear a lot of really interesting, you know, on the ground fundraising stories when you talk to a lot of fundraisers. So the really good ones really do integrate it, and they don't look at the donor as, oh, this is just a plan giving donor, or this is just this outright gift person. They look at it. And I like to call those people just more better donors. They're more better. I think that comes from like baseball or something. I don't know, more better, but
more batter.
More batter, right. More I don't batter, know. Maybe I made it up. I don't know. But you know, baseball been very, very good to me. So I think that you're more better donors, and you're not exactly sure what they're going to do, if anything, but they're the people that are gonna do more than just the $10 a year or $50 a year or something like that. So
that just to emphasize the point as it relates to marketing is think about that. I encourage our listeners to think about this concept for marketing. Or is your marketing siloed, and is there a way to make it more of a hybrid? I'm not saying that's always easy to do, but look at the marketing and say, yeah, you know what, we're promoting this siloed approach that we're trying to get rid of in the office by just sending out plan giving mailings. But I don't
right. Want to... And I think that also speaks to the spray, the whole spray and pray aspect of marketing in general, which is like, oh, let's just like send everything to everybody. And then, oh, let's put everything in it. Like, oh, let's talk about this, but let's also talk about this IRA gift. And let's, you know, no, that's not how really good marketing works. It's not broad. Really good marketing isn't broad with a really broad message and talking about a lot of different things in it. The best marketing is more, niche marketing. And so, cause you're reaching a smaller, now if you're selling car insurance, well, everybody needs car insurance, right? But if you're selling like a special kind of thing for a Porsche, well, you don't advertise on TV. You advertise in like Porsche magazine or whatever the heck, or you're on the Porsche Facebook page. You're with the Porsche people. So you don't just spray and pray on everybody. So one thing that I like to talk about with my clients is like peer-to-peer marketing. And that's a pretty easy thing to do. So let's say you're talking to a client, they say, you know, we just had all these volunteers come to our volunteer luncheon and they all put their name on this list for something. And I just don't really know what to do with them. I'm like, oh my God, I love that list. It's like a great list. So you have this list of people who just came to this event and they signed something because they were interested in something. And so, you know, they care. And then you could have another volunteer who's made a planned gift. She could send a letter to all those people on your list of volunteers who came to your lunch. And that volunteer's letter could be like, dear so-and-so, thanks so much for coming to the volunteer luncheon. Wasn't it great? And we have your name because you signed the thing about, you know, extra volunteering or something. And I just thought I'd tell you about something I've just done that I'm really proud of. And I recently updated my will and I included this charity in my plans. It was really easy and I'm proud of it. I just like to let you know about that. And then the letter goes on to ask and says, is this something you would consider? Or is this something you've already done perhaps? Well, if you've already done this, could you please fill out the enclosed bequest intention form and send it back to Joe Smith, our development director? Or if you're going to be updating your plan soon, here's a ways to give guide or an information sheet. And here's Joe Smith's card. He helped me and he's a lovely guy and he'd be happy to talk to you. And you can send this letter from this peer person to these other people. So it could be like any group of people that you have. Let's say you're a college and you have someone from the class of 1959 and in honor of their upcoming reunion. And what is that? A 59 reunion. So that's a 60 year reunion. So someone's done a planned gift in honor of their 60th class reunion. They can send a letter to the other people from that class and say, look, I've done this. I'm really proud of it. Is this something you'd consider? Here's Joe Smith's card. And what does that cost you? It doesn't cost you anything. It just costs you writing this letter and putting some stuff in it and the postage to send to maybe 50 people or 30 people or 100 people. So you can do these kind of, I call them like small batch peer outreach projects or whatever.
Great. That's great.
And I like to do that before, again, not that there's anything wrong with spending a lot of money on beautiful marketing, but you know, do you have all that money and have you exhausted all your free stuff first? Or are you just counting on this marketing to help you because you're so busy doing all these other things? So you're just going to spend $10,000 on this marketing and then you can check the box and you can tell your boss, oh, I'm doing planned giving. I bought all this stuff and I'm spending $10,000 on it. But then when the boss comes back to you and says, well, how did that do? Then what do you tell them? You've spent $10,000. So man, you better show them something. Whereas if you just do a batch of peer letters, it didn't really cost you all that much. And it's a great way to like start conversations with people. It's also good stewardship of that donor. Like you have this great donor. He did the gift 5 years ago. So some planned giving donor did a gift 5 years ago, but you love him. He's great. He's fabulous. So you call him up and you say, hey, Jack, how you doing? How are you? How's the garden? How's the house? How's your grandkids, whatever. I've got a question for you. I'm doing a little bit of outreach here and I'm hoping you can help me. Would it be okay would you mind like sending a letter to this group of people? And you don't have to write the letter, Jack. I'm going to write the letter. Or I'm going to have my fabulous, fabulous marketing person, Claire Meyerhoff. I'm going to have her write the letter. And then you can look at it. And if you like it, fine. Or you can change it. Or you can change your mind. But is that something you consider? And Jack would go, yeah, sure. You know, I wouldn't mind doing that. And then you write this nice letter from Jack. And then Jack looks at the letter. And then he signs off on it or not. And then you just do it. So I've done those kind of peer letters. And I have written letters for priests. As if I'm a priest, right? I write the letter, I'm Father John, and I've done this planned gift, and now I'm writing to all the other people in the diocese. So I've written as a priest, I've written as a nursing major at a college, all kinds of people. So you just write the letter from that person in their voice, hopefully, And then the person looks at it because nobody wants to write the letter. Like if you ask someone to write that letter, they can't write the letter. They don't know how to write the letter. That's intimidating. You're asking them for way too much. So whenever it's a letter, I write the letter and then I tell the person that. I said, look, I'll write it and you can look at it and you can change the whole thing if you want. I'll change the whole thing. I'll change whatever you like. And in my whole time of doing this, in like 15 years of writing letters for other people, I've never really had anybody change anything. They just look at it and usually they just change like two little words or something. Because if you really understand like the voice of the person and then you're keeping it really short too, that's another key. It's a short letter. It's not a big, long letter. It's just a little letter. It's like a hi, I'm like you. I used to serve on the board of this organization and I've done something I'm really proud of. I've done XYZ. Is this something you've done? Is this something you'd consider? If so, here's the card. Like it's really, I don't know why more people don't do this because it's so easy. Great. And so targeted and it doesn't cost you a whole lot. And it also helps you steward that lovely donor that from 3 years back or something, because they'll do the letter. So I call them peer letter packages. And so it's the letter and it's the, you know, you have to send them some information like a ways to give guide or a plan giving thing. And you ask them to join your legacy circle. You tell them about that. And it's just very soft. It's not a hard sell at all. And any organization can do it. How about this for a niche group of people? Past board members, former board members. You get a list of your former board members and you have another former board member who's a plan giving donor, send a letter to all those former board members. Now, shouldn't your former board members be like really great plan giving prospects? They were on the board.
Absolutely.
Right?
And the only other thing I want to add is pick up the phone and call these people after you send the letter. You know them all about.
See?
Pick up the phone, smiling and dialing. Call them. What did you get the letter? What did you think of the letter? How would you feel about a conversation with me about what we talked about in the letter?
Yeah, and that's a great thing for someone to do too, who's like a, you know, let's say they're a current board member and you know how current board members, they're all supposed to do a lot of stuff, right? And they're supposed to sell tickets for the event and do all this stuff and also give money of their own. So that's a great activity for a current board member. You can put them in charge of this little plan giving project and pick a niche group of people and they can send a letter to those people. Now they need to make the plan gift but that's a nice project for them. And then they can call the people or whatever. So, and follow up, that's a nice project for a board member or a volunteer or somebody. It's a really nice project.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, the clock is ticking here. Wow. Anything, I know, it goes so fast. Anything else that you'd want to throw out there for the audience to chew on?
I don't know. I would say that my main three takeaways are just, are you making the most of your existing communications platforms, right? Yeah. So you have a great donor story and you're putting it in your alumni magazine, you're putting it on your Facebook page, you're putting it in your newsletter. Like, do you have a great story and are you making the most of your existing communications platforms? And donor stories are great stories. And before I leave today, I always like to say this about donor stories. Everybody treats donor stories kind of like they just have to have them, right? So they gather this donor story and then they don't care about the photograph. They just get some crappy photograph or they grab some photograph from the last benefit or something where the guy's in a tuxedo or the lady's in a gown. No, spend some money on a photographer for your plan giving donors, because these are great people. This person's done this amazing thing. I don't want to hear, no, I don't have $200 for a photographer. This person just put you in their will and might be leaving you $800,000 or $2 million. You don't have $200 to take a photograph of them. So when you have like a really great donor and they want to be a part of this donor story, they're okay with it all. Get a photographer and put together some little event and take pictures of them. So if you're in, you know, the easy one is this, you're an animal shelter. Well, get the lady to come over to the animal shelter and she's hugging some puppies, right? Exactly. Get some pictures of that.
Yeah, or with kids.
Or reading to kids or building a fence, Habitat for Humanity. The guy's got a hammer, he's hitting the thing. Like, just get a picture of them doing something. not like sitting in a chair, right? That's the terrible plain giving picture. Someone sitting in a chair and they're old, and now you make them look older by putting them in a chair. So have them do something and take a great photograph of them. And then if you have a high quality, good photograph, you can do a lot with that. You can do a whole magazine feature around it. You can put it on Facebook, get a really good photograph. So that's always my main thing. Please hire the photographer. Don't make it an afterthought. It's always such an afterthought, the donor story. Oh, we're going to put a donor story in this month's alumni magazine. Oh, we'll just take this picture from the last reunion where the person's standing there, you know, with a cocktail. Wow. Well, that really makes me want to leave that charity in my will. That guy's drinking a cocktail. That's exciting.
Well, one of the things that I recommend with clients is that they, first of all, have a written process for onboarding a donor. So when a donor says you're in my will, or yes, I will do something, some type of state gift, have a written process for what happens next and who's involved and what you do. But part of that, I put in my process, is exactly this. Are they willing to share their story? Have that on the checklist.
Yes, that's good, Joe. That's right? Really,
and ask
really
them
good.
Up front. So this is part of it. Welcome. It's like, if I'm trying to think of an analogy, but if you think of services or clubs or something that you've joined where they're really buttoned down and
they ask you,
here's the welcome kit, here's the checklist. Go through
I'm
this.
I'm going to add that to my bequest, because I do these bequest intention forms for my clients, and I'm going to add that, because we typically will say, do you want your gift to remain anonymous? Can we include your name in our legacy society listings in our annual report and online? Right. And then add another one. Would you be willing to, share your story at some point or something like that? Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. I mean, I would make it kind of soft, because you don't want to think like, some reporter from like, Dateline is going to call them up. And so you have to make these things really soft, like, because it's just about like checking a box, yes or no. So you just want the people who indicate, right? It's that you want them to raise their hand a little bit. You don't want to say, will you be interviewed for a story? Just like, would you possibly be, perhaps, maybe, like I do things like that, make it really, really soft. And then they can check the box, yes or no, like in the future or whatever. Oh, and then later too, like if you send them something later, that's like a great way to follow up with people. And you can do a survey like later to all your legacy donors, right? So let's say you have 200 Legacy Society donors and you haven't heard from them in a while. Send them a survey. Send them a nice little survey that's not about a whole lot, but just like a little story-based survey. And at the end of it, say, would you be willing to share your story in our alumni magazine or on our whatever? So yes, I like that, Joe. That's great.
See that? We lots of ideas. Any others before
we've always worked well together, Joe, because we worked for different companies and stuff. You were in sales. I was in making the content. We would talk about things and you would tell me about the people and I would tell you about stuff I do. And a lot of times we always had good ideas. So
that's great. And so how can people get in touch with you, Claire?
Well, they can call me 1-800. No, just kidding. They can send me an email at claire@pgagency.com. My company's the Plan Giving Agency. And so it's just Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E, @pgagency.com. So that's like the easiest way. Just send me an email. And I love to talk to anybody. So if you're listening to this podcast, you just want some ideas, you want to just run something by me, just send me an email. We'll set up a little time to chat. And I'm happy to chat with anybody. No obligation or anything. Of course, I'm always looking for new clients, but I really love talking to everybody about what they're doing with their plan giving marketing right now, and what's worked, what hasn't worked, and how I can move them forward a little bit. So yeah, so they can send me a quick email at claire@pgagency.com, or find me on LinkedIn and then send me a message through LinkedIn. So if you're already not linked in with me, I love LinkedIn. It's just the best, because it just keeps all your people together. And when they get a new job, you hear about it, you know where people move. So please, please, if you're listening to this podcast, send me and Joe a LinkedIn invitation, and we would love to be linked in with you.
Wonderful. Claire, thank you so much.
Joe, thank you so much. Thank you for having this podcast. I think you've done a great job, and I'm really, really happy that you're doing it. And I have to say, your style of podcast is so refreshing and nice, because I don't feel like I was being interviewed. It was really just more of like a really nice conversation. It was like having a cup of Joe with Joe.
All right. Another idea. There you go. Well, just like we rehearsed. Well said, Claire.
We did not rehearse that. I came up with that.
Well, until next time, we'll have you back. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.